Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. This is our second episode of the week. That is when we tend to do an interview. We got joining us 2-time NBA champion, and he is also the COO of the Historic Basketball League. We're going to talk to him a little more about that. It's David West. What's going on, man?
What's up, man?
Yeah, man.
I'm here. Appreciate it.
Now, you're like kind of sort of from up here, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, I was born and raised up here. I was 17 years. I lived in Teaneck, New Jersey, right outside of New York. And my family, I was just telling my buddy, one of the guys with me is I don't remember a time being on this earth without knowing him.
Right.
We used to travel. I used to come into Brooklyn every weekend with my mom for church. And so the first half of my life was up here in this area.
Cause Raleigh claims you also.
I claim Raleigh too, because I grew up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the world became real to me, in that transition from up north to.
Yeah, no, because I didn't even realize it until I think somebody I knew who went to high school with you mentioned that. And I was like, wait, what? And then I was trying to put that together with Xavier and then everything else.
Right.
And then you knew Lavelle, but everybody knows Lavelle.
Right.
And you wind up knowing Lavelle.
Right.
So, okay, that all makes sense now. So with the Historic Basketball League, I don't think that many of our listeners are familiar with exactly what's going on here. So what's the story with the league?
All right, so the Historic Basketball League is a league that we intend to compensate college age athletes. Obviously right now there's only one option for those guys. And we feel like, the market, the timing was right to create another option, to give these guys an opportunity to, and a lot of time for a lot of them to maximize, the height of their basketball career. What we tend to make a mistake about, when it comes to professional sports is this idea that everybody's got a shot to make it. For the minority of kids in college, that college experience is going to be the height of their athletic career. So based on just a clean market analysis, looking at, some of the issues that we know currently with the system, the HBL is just a new opportunity for college athletes who want to take a more professional approach, to their careers, not limiting themselves to just this idea that they have to be amateurs for a time and not be compensated, not partake in the business that they help generate massive profits in.
Now, I think an interesting part of that is that also kind of requires a school to look up and say to itself, okay, what's going on here is not the way to go. We're going to try something different. So, like, how, in terms of talking to schools and getting them involved, what's that process been like?
Well, for us, so we're looking at traditional and non-traditional ways to educate. The fact of the matter is that most of the guys who try to go into the current system we're trying to fit them into a structure that's already existing. And our motto is to sort of find education that fits the players, that fits their life pursuits. One of the things I've experienced in the NBA is this idea that just because you go to college, you come out developed. I mean, that's probably the furthest thing from the truth. There has to be some real intent in terms of personal development and then obviously professional skill development. So our intent is to go that direction. We are going to communicate and have, partnerships with universities that understand sort of how we're trying to approach this thing. You know, what's unique about the league is that we're going to play in the summer. We're going to play through from June into mid to late September. The hope is that to give these, to be a new opportunity. There's not a lot of basketball during that time. We feel like, obviously young people are the ones who drive the market. So we want to be able to present to the young people, when they're not occupied in school. And then obviously going back into the school year, like in September, we have a system that would allow these kids the type of, pursuit in terms of education that's going to be beneficial to them, right? Like, how to balance a checkbook. To believe it or not, those things are not taught at universities to college athletes. How to manage your time, how to prepare yourself to be a professional, how to communicate, how to articulate, understanding body language, media training, things that I know as a professional athlete that I had to figure out while I was a professional athlete and I wasn't prepped necessarily before. And so we want to get away from this whole idea that somehow you know, these kids are amateurs and they're not, you know, generating massive market numbers. And we just feel like they deserve an opportunity to share in it. And so we've created this league to be an equitable space for them. You know, licensing agreement for the players so they can, you know, profit and benefit from their likeness. You know, obviously we're going to work with an operator type setup. So we're going to have individual team operators. The league will own the teams, you know, obviously from at the beginning. But again, we feel like the opportunity is there. And we feel like right now is the perfect opportunity to present a new new and fresh, you know, perspective on the way we view these athletes.
Now, when do you expect like a reasonable timetable for the progression of this league? Yeah. What do you guys have in mind there?
All right. So we're targeting 2020, the summer of 2020 to be our inaugural season. You know, right now we felt like the timing, you know, was good in terms of, you know, they were basically waiting for me to figure out what I wanted to do, you know, retire or whatever. So we got that part settled. You know, the next phase is again, just bringing awareness, you know, letting people sort of wrap their arms around this concept, how it makes sense and why, these guys, to start with need another option, because currently the option that's available to them leaves out certain people, doesn't include everyone, obviously doesn't put the rights or the interests of the athlete, on Front Street the way it needs to be. And so we just feel like, you know, there's an opportunity to create something. We feel that young people will be, again, the athlete is the center of our focus. You know, we want to make sure we maximize everything, about that athlete, present them with tools that, as a former professional athlete now, I know that, most young guys need, to give themselves a shot.
Well, also, I'm curious about, because the transition to, like, professional basketball is its own thing, but I always wonder, like, the transition even into playing major college basketball, right, like, as it stands now, like, the difficulty of managing whatever form of students that you are, along with actually playing, like, a basketball season, right, at the same time, because that seems to be something you guys are trying to avoid. Right. So, like, for you, how hard was that transition just going into being a college basketball player?
Right. So, I mean, I'll speak fairly honestly here. So, I got lucky because I went to a super duper small school. I mean, I was in classrooms with like 12 and 13 people. So I basically went to a large private high school.
And you went to Xavier.
I went to Xavier in Cincinnati. So it's small, private. And so I had a different college experience just in terms of, because it was a small incubator. But when you think about these major universities, you know, we know that these guys are not at those schools to be students, right? They're there to be athletes, to be revenue generating athletes. And the hope is that they don't screw up in school so that they don't screw up their ability to be on the field or on the court. And that is the crux of sort of how we're approaching this. You know, you know that it's hard to balance and it's hard to focus, and there are kids that can do it, that can handle that demand, but we know that the majority of the kids can't. And so then what happens is you have to supplement legitimate education for phony, bogus classes, right? You've got to literally just, it's a facade more than actual meat and potatoes. And so we're going to create an environment or a system that is conducive to the athlete. So for example, when we finish playing in September, right? Athletes get a month off, let their bodies recuperate or whatever. They become students without the burden of having to practice and perform in game. Now, we're not taking our hands off of them. You know, we'll have professional trainers implemented into their structure, because one thing these guys don't get is the sort of individualized skill development that prepares them for the NBA. You can ask any NBA player, they'll tell you that players coming out of college need a long, you know, most of them need more time. You say, well, this guy's been in school 3 or 4 years. He still needs time to develop, because he was being developed to be productive at that school and not necessarily for his next step in his professional career. So you have that transition where kids and players aren't necessarily ready to play in the NBA because they're not getting developed in college. And then that same instance happens in high school, right? Unless, you know, you have a kid, and LeBron is probably the best example I've seen in my career, right, of a guy who's able to prepare like a pro at a very young age. I witnessed that with my own eyes. And then that basically allowed him this seamless transition into the life of professional sports. But he prepared himself for that all 4 years while he was in high school. And so we feel like the same sort of investment needs to be given to, or opportunities to be presented to these young athletes, so that it's saying, okay, we understand that, you know, you've been pushed along. We've got to be very honest. You know, the other part about this is the honesty that we have to have about these conversations. Most of these young black athletes are pushed along through high school, right? When they get into the college environment, now all of a sudden it's, well, you got to pretend to be a student athlete. You got to pretend that the classes that you're taking, you're really learning things. And then you get into, you know, your professional pursuits, and literally there's nothing in that 2 or 3 or 4 years, 8 months, however long it is you're on campus, that you retain, that you can honestly use. Right. And we know that that is more so the case than not, right? Majority of our guys come in, they need personal development in terms of not basketball, but personal development. And I've made it a point with the guys within the HBL to make sure that, you know, that's something we're going to tackle. That's a personal challenge that I'm going to, you know, put upon myself to make sure that we're producing the type of athlete that can represent himself, represent his family, represent his own interests as well, in terms of just having the type of information that will allow them to communicate and be a part of the larger, bigger picture, right? And also not to have, you know, have that ability to be able to manage things around you, and, you know, how to say no, right? That's part of the curriculum that we're developing, is this idea around how to say no, how to limit, you know, people, you know, wanting to be a part. How do you make, you know, good decisions? Right. All of those things are going to be a part of our educational system, right? We're creating this thing for education that fits our athletes. And so there'll be some universities, that will have things in place that will work, meaning four-year universities, we'll use those. We'll use two-year universities. We'll use technical colleges. We'll use trade schools. We'll use online universities. And then we're going to use some specialized programs, you know, that we, and he won't be a part of this, but if we use Zion Williamson as an example, right? Right. All he needs to be doing right now, right, is learning about how to properly pick a financial advisor, how to learn how to properly organize himself business-wise. Right. Do you have a tax attorney, right? Do you have an agent you can trust? What's your vetting process for your agent, right? How do you talk to the media? How do you engage the media? Interview prep. I watched him the other night post-game, and I'm like, somebody's got to help him. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
And I mean, not to say anything negative about him, but what I'm saying is he's a perfect example for a kid that, you know, what the next 10 or 12 years, 15 years of his life is going to be. Why not design programs educationally that will best benefit him? And that's what we intend to do.
You know, the development angle really jumped out to me, because, like, I think about even our business. Like, I didn't go to school and study journalism, but, like, the people who did, they all say that once they got in the business, what they did studying journalism, that didn't really matter, right?
Right.
Like, they got it. Like, internships matter more for preparing them than education,
right?
Which is kind of the same as what you're talking about here with basketball, right?
Right.
Is that you are in, like, it's not a college's job in our stuff to necessarily get you ready for the job you're going to have,
right?
So they don't do that in that way. And with college basketball, that's a different game than the NBA, right? And we always assume you stay 4 years, then you are going to get better. I always felt like you probably grow up, right? Like, the growing up part is probably more important than, you know, going out here and playing according to college basketball rules.
Right. And probably if you look at most of these guys, I mean, that's probably one thing that they can say, well, I did grow up while I was in college, right? You learn just how to sort of be a semi-adult. But not everybody does, you know?
Right.
You know, one of the things that you learn being in the NBA is that, you know, adults can be very immature, and that, you know, for some of our guys who are in the elite bubble, I'm meaning that by the time they're in eighth grade, everyone knows,
just elite.
For a lot of those guys, I mean, they've never had to grow up, right? They've never had to sort of invest in these personal pieces that will allow you to be marketable, allow you to be more versatile, and allow you to be able to take your talents into other realms and aspects of life. And I think we're just leaving this window open and leaving a lot of young people unprepared, because the other part of this is the reality is, like, I think it's less than two, right at 2%, a little less than 2% of guys who are playing, you know, college basketball are going to play in the big leagues. So the majority of these guys have got to get prepared to do other things. And what I've found and has helped me is that learning basketball, being a part of, just good environments, understanding how basketball was helping sort of develop other parts of me, it helped sort of give me a framework to, like, base an intelligence off of. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I know basketball. And, well, why do I know basketball? Well, because I can think it through, and I can look at tape and learn how to analyze it. And these are things I started to pick up in my career and said, yo, I mean, I can transfer this to other aspects of my life, and it works. So, I just feel like there are opportunities. Yeah, we know these kids can play. We know they can produce at a high, high level, but I think they become more valuable. Right? Players become nothing kills me more than to watch a guy who everyone has known, right? This dude is going to be the thing, right? And he's 19, 20 years old, and he cannot speak.
Yeah.
It drives me to the wall, man, because I'm saying, okay, well, you knew he was the best player at 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade, right? Number one player in the country. Nobody thought, hey, this kid needs a 6 or 8 week communications course. He needs a personal media coach.
No, something. They hide him. Like you think about Derrick Rose, right? Where it was a different circumstance, but it was clear that their game was, we're going to keep everybody away from him. And then the day comes, like I saw Tyreke Evans once at a NABJ panel. This was like after his rookie year, the year after his rookie year. And he was up there with his people. And I'll just never forget, he couldn't even look, like he did not feel comfortable looking at us. The people that are around him did all the talking, and you'd ask him a question and he'd be just very shy. Like I'm assuming it's different now because it's been about 10 years, but he would just be kind of like, yeah, like that sort of thing. Cause their game plan was, we're going to keep everybody away from him to make sure that he gets here. And now you got to talk to people like a grown up and you ain't done
you
it
can't
before.
Do it. Right. Right. And it's a very, and so these, like we don't talk about that, you know, because it's, I don't know, it's touchy subject, I guess, at times. And I'm not questioning intelligence. But
right.
What I'm questioning is, you know, are we preparing them, again, to be what we know they're going to be, right? Like, there's no question about some of these kids and their futures. So why aren't they being prepared from day one to walk into their future? You know, why? You know, the other issue that sort of we're going to tackle is this concept of everyone shooting for the NBA, right? So there are leagues all over the world. And the bottom line is, like I said, there are a couple guys, like on my college team, I was the one guy that had the long NBA career.
Right.
But like two or three teammates that had legitimate careers overseas, 10-plus year careers, right? I don't want to get into this situation where we're saying, well, if you don't make the NBA, then there's nothing else.
Right.
Right. We see a kid at 18 or 19 and say, you know what, buddy? Look, let me be honest with you, right? We're going to bring this realism to him. No, you're probably not going to be a top 15, top 20 pick. Chances are you'd be a second round pick at the height of your development. But I bet you, I tell you what, you have the skill set that can probably get you a 10-plus year career overseas. If you start preparing for that now, you know, you won't feel that disappointment. And then those other leagues won't feel second fiddle, right? So all those other leagues are like, well, this guy didn't make it to the NBA. Now he wants to come to us. We prepare a kid to say, look, man, you're going to be a EuroLeague star. That's what you're going to be. You know, there's nothing wrong in realizing that's your reality, right? When I was in the NBA, when I was first started, a lot of my family members and stuff like, yo, man, you got to do this. You got to do that. You know, my agent choice when I decided to pick my agent, I went with the guy that told me the plain truth. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I had interviewed a bunch of these dudes and these guys are coming in like, yo, man, you're going to be the number one pick.
Right.
And I'm like,
And you were in the draft of LeBron.
Yeah,
right?
I was like, nope. You know, you're done. You know, you're done. The guy that came in and said, look, David, we know you're a great player. You're going to have a great career. But these teams, there are a bunch of teams that aren't sold. Young general managers. There are like three or four teams that are definitely going to draft you if you're there. So I was like, that's what I need.
Yeah.
You got the job, right? And that type of realism isn't in this younger college space. These kids are sold and told dreams. Everybody's got a shot to be in the NBA. Everybody's going to be the number one player. You're going to have such and such career. You're the best player. And, you know, that was one of the things that allowed me to get out of my own way. It was this idea that, man, nah, David, you are not a great player. You are not on these guys' level, right? But you got to figure out a way to get there, to at least compete. You know, if probably about 2010 or maybe before then, I think ESPN and a few other organizations started doing these silent surveys in the NBA.
Right.
Who's the best player?
Right.
And I remember realizing how delusional NBA guys were. I didn't realize it until they started these surveys, because the first question was, who's the best player in the NBA? And in my mind, like I keep myself in reality. There's only two or three guys that you could put
right
in that conversation.
Right.
Period, man. You know, but then I look at the list. I'm like, that's who these guys are. These guys are really saying that they are, they think they're the best players.
Yes.
I said, there's no way you can really accomplish what you're set to accomplish if you're not real with yourself. And so I'm like, yo, this is why a lot of these guys are struggling. These guys have these attitudes because they're not real with themselves. You really think you better than Kobe Bryant? You really think you better than LeBron James?
Dude, it's the Ricky Davis story.
Yes, all of that to me, again, just, it goes into this thinking of like, look, man, we have to be real at a very early stage, man, with our young people and particularly these athletes, because, I mean, I don't know how many guys, I see a couple guys every summer, and I'm a big grassroots AAU guy. I see a couple kids every summer that have legitimate high level, high major D1 talent. And literally I'm saying to myself, if the right person gets their hands on this kid, he's a pro.
Right.
Right. But this kid academically has never found a fit. Chances are he's probably going to quit 10th, 11th grade because the idea of having to take an ACT, idea of having to qualify on SAT, grade point average. A lot of these kids say, to hell with it.
Right.
Right? We want to be the fill-in. We want to say there's an opportunity for everyone. We know, right, by virtue of the history, I'm going to go a little political here, but this is a part of what we're doing. Like, by virtue of history, we know that the way education is designed in this nation isn't necessarily designed to give people the things that they need, the right information that they need to work for them. And so since that's sort of the underlying principle in all this, we're going to go the opposite way. We want to find the things that you need, right? Talk to mom and dad. Hey, man, all of our guys need media training. All of our guys need public speaking. All of our guys need personal etiquette. All our guys need time management. All of our guys need, you know, decision-making courses, period, you know. And then if there's a guy who's going to be because it's a five-year program, you know, 4 years undergrad, 1 year master. So if there's a guy that's going to be a five-year guy, hey, we know we're going to have some of those guys, right? Guys who just, like an Aaron Kraft, for example,
right,
at Ohio State. The height of his basketball career is going to be in this little 4 or 5 year window. Give him an opportunity to make some money, you know, profit off of his likeness, meaning jersey sales with his names on it, all the different marketing agreements, a lot of the things that these kids have to wait a year for. You know, we're going to remove all of that. Play with NBA rules, you know, a sort of a feeder for referees. So we want the referees to be, you know, on course with NBA referees. We want to create a completely professional environment for these young people. And we don't want to operate under the assumption that – because they're young and black, that they somehow will all of a sudden not want to play basketball anymore.
Just because they got some money, right?
Become lazy and, you know, we're just not going to play those games.
Now, how do you compete with the NCAA against this? Because the revenue generator for the NCAA is television money, right? So how does this go to generate the revenue to pay the players for this league?
So without giving up too much.
Gotcha.
I will say that, the NCAA does not have a licensing agreement with the players. And there are some, intentional, and some pretty inefficient, mechanisms that they are basically tied down to because of their refusal to pay their athletes.
Right.
We are, our idea or our plan is to go digital. We're going to distribute digitally, obviously knowing the times and what's coming. So that is our plan, is to distribute digitally, to be at the forefront of sports in terms of, you know, turning the corner in terms of how we deliver the content. And then again, we fully believe that the players are the ones that drive this thing. So we create the opportunity, we create the landscape that they understand, let them know that, you know, this opportunity is solely beneficial for them. It respects them and their pursuits as athletes and young people. And then we feel like everything else will fall into place. Obviously, we're going to have, you know, great interest from, I believe, from a lot of kids, particularly the ones that have made this decision that they're going to go in this professional course. You know, we want to be the best system for them to go into.
You know, you mentioned when we were talking about, you know, the guys going to Europe and stuff like that. I think people lose sight of the math that the draft tells you. There's like two spots opening up per year per team.
Right.
Right. That's what you could reasonably expect, that there are two spots per team across the league that are going to open up, and everybody else is going to be either going to the D League or getting a passport. Right. Like those are the options. Right. And I feel like that simple math really does get lost on a lot of people.
Yeah. It goes back to like decision making. It goes back to just being able to clearly see, you know, what's in front of you. And, For young people in particular, I mean, you know, we are sold that it's NBA or bust. Like, you couldn't tell, even though I wasn't ranked coming out of high school and I didn't get a whole lot of notoriety and stuff in college, but you couldn't tell, like, there was never a point that I didn't focus on making the NBA. You know, and it worked out for me, but I can literally point to, I think, let me see, every year is in the NBA, 15 seasons, literally, right, a guy or two a year just gone. You know, training camp guy, made the wrong decision. Like, dude, you should have taken that money in Hungary or not come here for 12 days and then get cut on the last day. And then what was available for you 12 days ago is, like, not there. And I've seen that over, but it's because guys are hell-bent on this dream. And if you're sold this thing and like there's nothing else, it's either this or there is no career. I mean, that's a very, very tough pill to swallow for a lot of guys. I listened to, Telfair's interview last week. I think he was on a show last week and he was basically saying like that was his issue. Like he was so hell bent on basketball was only legitimized by playing in the NBA that he undermined, you know, probably, you know, 3 or 4 years of his career because he didn't see legitimate basketball in any other arena outside of the NBA. And so I don't want to have guys or kids preparing that way. We want to prepare our kids for reality. Yo, look, your skill set, your ability to knock down shots, you know, maybe, you know, guards defensively, look, it's going to be tough for you to keep these high caliber NBA level guards in front of you, but you'll be a dominant guard in Europe for 10 years if you understand opportunity is opportunity.
But people misunderstand, man. You got to be so good to play in the NBA. Like, you know, and it's like you say it, it is an obvious thing, but you'll talk to Cass and be like, so why didn't it work for you in the NBA? Couldn't get my shot off. Like, literally, like the best player wherever he had been before, I could not get my shot off. Like, you have to be so good to play on that level. Like, to play in Europe, you got to be really, 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 really good.
Right.
But the NBA, man, no. This is different, man.
Right. And that's what people don't get. Right. It's that like I tell people all the time, I'm like, you guys don't understand that the line. Like I was talking to a guy yesterday and we were talking about Chris, about CP. And, you know, we were basically saying like Chris got drafted literally by the right coach at the right time because Chris needed the ball. And I think Darren Williams was drafted, what, ahead of him?
Yep.
So imagine CP.
Jerry Sloan.
Right? Chris is calling all the play.
That's not going to work. Right.
So, you know, a lot of it has to do with timing, but it literally has to do with the opportunity and then your ability, like you said, to just play. And it makes it's hard sometimes when people demean that or make it seem like that's what drives me crazy about Instagram is all of these guys are basketball scientists and they just create these posts of who would win this thing and who would do, and I'm saying it's cool because I'm an adult and I understand it's crap, but these young kids legitimately, you know, don't understand. They think the NBA is just, well, I'll snap my fingers and I'll make it, you know. No, it is. It's just a process. And I don't ever want to be unrealistic to players, particularly young players. I go out of my way. You know, when I meet young guys, I give them, you can ask any young player that's ever crossed my path, I don't lie. Look, man, I've seen you on TV. You better get stronger. Look, man, you better figure out how to knock that shot down. You know, you ask, what's the kid? Von Lee. Mm-hmm. Ask Noah Von Lee what I said to him a couple years ago. You know, and I see he's listened, you know, but a guy like that, I'm playing against him as a competitor, knowing I've only got a couple years, and I'm looking at him, seeing kind of myself in him to a degree.
Right.
But I'm saying, bro, you got to do this. You got to do, if you want to stay in, you got to do this. And I just feel like that realism, like I've had with myself, I knew I wasn't the best player in the league. I knew I wasn't as good as these franchise players, you know, in order to compete against Dirk. No, I'm not at that level, man. But I can work and bust my butt to get to a level where I can be respectable against this guy when I'm on the floor. And for me, that was enough. Like, for me, there was pride in that. What I wasn't going to do is go out here and convince myself that I was better than that man or at the level of a Tim Duncan and go out there and look like an absolute you know what I mean? I wasn't going
to
do that.
I have to ask you this, since you mentioned Dirk, man. Why you do that to him that one time, man?
That was my...
Why you had to tap Dirk on the jaw?
Dirk will tell you, Dirk was elbowing me every other play in my chin. Every... pop. And he, you know, he was tall and, had those, you know, wide shoulders. So he literally just him lifting the ball up, he just hit me under my chin. And I'm like, yo, you know. And that year we had some run-ins and I'm like, I'm talking to the referees. I'm like, man, I know this guy's all world. You know, Dirk is averaging almost 30 a game. He's prime of his career. I'm like, I understand all that, fellas, but this is getting ridiculous. And it was just that one time he did it again. I was like, man, we're just going to stop this right here. We're just going to stop it. We're going to put an end to it.
He looked like he listened.
Yeah, man, because we didn't have any issues after that. For the next however many years we competed against each other, didn't have any issues. But it was like that moment I'm like, okay, you really think I'm a hoe. Like, I know you getting the best of me, but you taking this like I'm a punk or something. And we can't have that. You know what I'm saying?
I can tell that's a turning point in his career, though, because y'all beat them in that series. Yeah. And then the next year, he had that little situation. But he lit up whoever they played in the playoffs, yeah, but did, they yeah. lost. Right. And then 2 years later, he became champion Dirk. Because that was back when we were like, dude, Dirk looked like he was a little bit soft.
We ain't
said that about Dirk in 7 years.
I think
you changed that man's life.
Nah.
That's like, Jerry Stackhouse would say that, that would be like, you know what? I think that was the moment that everything turned around.
So everything changed. So.
Yeah, man. So for you, what's it like working with this league?
It's great, man. You know, these guys have, you know, it's weird how this came together. About when I was with the Spurs, Matt Bonner, he and I became cool. And Matt is out there. He's got some pretty wild views. And so he's like, man, you and my brother should talk.
Luke. Yeah, I know Luke.
And so, you know, I got in touch with Luke and we communicated for the next couple years. And then I was doing a documentary, a guy was doing a documentary on just like, you know, athletes, college athletes or something. And I'm sitting there talking and he's like, man, I got a guy that you should meet. And he was talking about Andy.
Right. Andy Schwartz.
Right. And so I was like, okay. And then literally probably, I would say probably like a day after I retired, Luke was, hey man, what do you think about joining the crew? And so, at that moment, you know, got on the phone with Ricky, got on the phone with Keith, some of the other leaders, and we just hashed it out for a couple months. And, it's been cool, man. Like I said, it's a lot of, you know, for me, it's basketball. That's what I wanted to, you know, I was trying to figure out, like, should I just chill, which I've been doing and enjoying? Do I go back right into the NBA in some capacity? There were opportunities there. And I said, I mean, I could do that. But I just came out of that,
right,
that schedule, 15 straight years. So I said, I can take a break from that, you know, maintain friendships and relationships, but I've always got this itch for basketball. You know, it's a part of sort of who I am. It's what I've done all my life. So, it was a natural fit. These guys are, you know, motivated to do the right thing. You know, this is something in terms of, you know, my outlook on life. It's something that I feel like, you know, can be a big opportunity to just start a conversation about creating, systems, ecosystems in particular that are equitable from the gate. You know, let's not create something with this devious, we're going to undermine and take advantage of this group right out the gate. And then if they figure it out in 10 or 15 years, we'll adjust. No, let's put something fair and equitable on the table right at the beginning. And let's see what type of business we can grow, what type of impact we can have with it.
Like, while you were a player, how much thought do you give while you're playing to what you're going to do afterward?
I started as a rookie because, man, when I got drafted, I was on the oldest team in the NBA. Literally. I mean, we were like the gaps in age. I was like 22. I think the next guy closest to me might have been Barron at like 23, 24.
Right.
And then it was like Tractor Trailer. It was like Tractor Trailer and Jamal McGlure, right, at like 26, 27.
Right.
And then it was like David Wesley, Darrell Armstrong, George Lynch, Steve Smith, 35 and up. You know what,
right,
I mean? I'm like, yo. So when I got into the NBA, you know, these guys have like, yeah, my son is only like 4 or 5 years younger than you, boy. You know, so I'm like, dang, okay. So it was I was going into a very sturdy vet. I mean, there were no games. Like, I don't remember any of the vet haze, and they were just, right, too old for that stuff.
Right.
They were all business. Hey, man, hey, young fella, don't let us beat you in the gym. Okay. You know, it took Stacey Ogwin like one time. Stacey that was my vet. You know, he asked me, he said, young fella, I like to pay my bills. That he used to take his old school, used to literally write his checks out like on Thursday. He'd write his checks out like on Thursday. And then he would come to my door and be like, hey, young fella, need to go drop my bills off for me. I mean, that was the worst. The worst I got. Like, these guys were mature. I mean, they knew how to stay in. That's all they were giving me. They weren't giving me any of the crap. They were like, look, man, you got to take care of your body. You got to get in the weight room. You know, you got to be smart. You got to prepare to leave this thing right now. So literally one of the first conversations I had with PJ Brown was, yeah, I know you just got drafted, young fella, but this thing ain't going to last forever. This is literally like 48 hours, right, you know, after being drafted. It's not going to last forever. And, you know, yeah, you handled yourself in college, but this is a different level. You know, you got to start. There ain't no time off. And all, you know, I was getting that stuff all the time. And, you know, I'm so lucky. I've seen like different reworks and say, well, you should have been drafted higher, but I got drafted exactly where I needed to get drafted, because I guarantee you other guys in my draft, the majority of the guys in front of me didn't make it. I mean, the top three or four made it.
Right.
But a lot of those other guys just fell by the wayside. And the big reason, it had nothing to do with their talent. It was just parts of them that weren't developed. And then they didn't go into the environment that was like guys 35, 34, 33, you know, knowing exact. I mean, I think we started the oldest starting lineup in the history of the NBA that year. I mean, everybody was like 34.
Right.
34, 35, like Steve and George Lynch started together. I'm like, dang, you know, yeah. And we had Sean Rooks. Rooks was on that team. Yeah, you know, way before he passed, like his last year or two, but he was on that team. So it was just a completely veteran laden group that they let me know from day one, I got to start preparing my life, you know, after basketball right now. And it was just, again, you know, they didn't, you know, David Wesley wouldn't let me, give short answers in interviews. You know, Stacey Augmon wouldn't let me, like, get that whole MBA. Somebody's going to drive me around here and there. Man, young fella, drive yourself to this place. Right. You don't need no chauffeur. Drive there. You know what I'm saying? Go in the store and get your food.
Right.
Like, I was thinking, oh, I'm coming into the NBA. People going to carry my groceries, and I ain't got to. Nah, they didn't let me get into any of that. You know, PJ was driving his, man, PJ might have been driving the first Navigator they ever put on the road, man, when I got there. He just, you know, it was just a different environment, man, that helped me and gave me the information I needed to carry this thing all the way through.
You're also living in New Orleans, which is the most fascinating place in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My first experience in New Orleans was weird. I get off the plane. I intentionally was like, I'm not, this was after the draft. So when I went to return to live for good, I said, I'm going by myself. I don't want to go with my mom, dad. I don't want my agent to be there. So I go to New Orleans. I get into the Walgreens on, what is that? St. Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing there. I got like toothpaste, toothbrush, and I'm probably like four or five people back. And this dude literally sticks up to Walgreens. This is my literally off the plane on the St. Charles. Like I'm at the Marriott on Canal. I'm in this Walgreens on St. Charles and it's getting robbed. And I just froze. And like the dude, he snatched the stuff. The manager comes running. The guy goes out the door. The manager comes running by and I'm just like, what the hell just happened? So when I get out the store, I call my agent. I'm like, man, you won't believe what just happened. He said, don't you tell your mother. don't you mention it to her. Don't you open your mouth. I said, cool. Then literally, like, as I'm going back to the hotel, I got introduced to, like, a shrimp po' boy, right?
Yeah.
So I go from, like, having this, dang, man, I'm in New Orleans, this place. Then I'm like, man, this is the most delicious sandwich I've ever had. This place is great. Like the food, I had a po' boy and a beignet, like literally in that same little hour window. And that just, I was like, man, it's going to be pretty good down here. It's going to be pretty dope down here.
The thing I always say about New Orleans is it would be awful if it wasn't so awesome.
Right.
Everything about it that is awesome is amazing. The worst is awful.
Right.
But everything else is just
food,
great.
It's unique. And I enjoyed my time down there. You know what I'm saying? The opportunity to just be a part of that city.
All right, now stick around. We are going to talk to David West about what's going on with the Warriors. But first, guys, have you ever had a made-to-measure suit? It fits so much better and is so much more comfortable having something that's fit to your measurements. There's no longer any excuse for wearing an ill-fitting suit, especially when made-to-measure suits are available at such great prices. Highest quality, lowest price. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from and the option to personalize details like the lapel, the lining, the pockets, buttons, even write in your own monogram like I did with the shirt I got from Indochino. You can visit a stylist at our showroom or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your design customization, submit your measurements with your choices, then just relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Just watch as the compliments roll in. And look, November is Black Friday season. That means that 2018's lowest prices are here. That's up to 70% off everything. My listeners this week can avail of Black Friday pricing by using code BOMANI at checkout. That's 70% off the regular price for a made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com. Promo code BOMANI for up to 70% off. It's an incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit. Yo, why don't you go custom? You don't go rack. Let me ask this. You talked about the veterans that, you know, when you were a rookie, mm-hmm. What do you think they would have said when you had told them, I'm going to opt out of this contract with Indiana to take this minimum deal in San Antonio?
So I talked to a few of them.
Really?
And nobody really. I mean, PJ is probably the guy that I depended on most. And he said, Wes, you got to follow your head and your heart. And I was like, okay. And he was like, you got to make the decision that you think is going to be best for you and what you want to get out of it. And I was like, okay. And I was sitting there and I was thinking. And then I talked to DA, and DA was like, nah, DA was like, man, that's a lot of money, but, you know, you got to do what you want to do. You got to do what you got. If you can do what you want to do, do what you want to do. And it was like, it was easy. Like when I talked to them, and even this summer, man, when I was contemplating, you know, retiring or whatever, like it was like, it took like a 15-minute conversation from Mash, who was on that team.
Right.
To sort of just say, okay, you're right. Like them guys still serve their role. When I saw Stacey Augman, the last time I saw him, you know, he was like, he looked at me, he said, you ready? Like, you know, I said, what are you talking about, Ice? Ah, young fella, you ready? And he knew, he could see it in my face, you know what I mean?
Right.
And those guys have always been my sages. And so when none of them, you know, had an issue with it, those guys were at a time where they played, you know, I remember talking to Smitty, you know, and he was, a conversation we had about his career with Michael Jordan, right? He said, Wes, you know, every night I'd be like, you know what? I did it. And then I get in the locker room and this dude done something else. He said, man, you know, had a great year this year. We got to play this dude in the first round. Another great year. Should have been this. This dude's got 55. You know, it's just, and so at the end of Smitty's career, he was talking, you know, really talking about like, it ain't the money and stuff is not what you're going to hold on to. It's going to be these experiences. And these are the things that you're going to be able to carry with you as time goes on and the game gets further and further away from you. And so I looked at all of that. And, you know, I've always said, like, when I came in the NBA, I was talking to my – I said, I'm going to do 10 years. I said, if we get to 10 years, we great. Like, that's perfect for us. And, like, when I got to year 12, 13, I'm like, man, let me just – nah, we gonna make some decisions that aren't just about the money. We're going to make some decisions about – happiness and feeling good and, you know, enjoying going through this, you know, giving up 300 days a year of your life, you know.
Right.
We're going to enjoy this last few years if we're going to do it.
Yeah, I tell you, one thing that was funny, I was doing a radio segment with my buddy Shannon once, and we were talking about the Warriors as, you know, it was after the 2016 season. And we were like, yeah, you know, it's like, so, you know, the guys that might wind up, you know, filling those spots on the roster, I was like, well, you know, I can see them go get a guy like David West. And Shannon says, the Warriors just signed David West. Like, it literally went like that. I was just like, yeah, I mean, that seems like a fit that you could have. And he was like, no, actually, that just happened just a second ago. So, like, after that year in San Antonio, was that just like a no-brainer choice?
Yeah.
If it was available?
Yeah, because it, and I don't want to say it, like, it was always sort of there. But I just wanted to get there my own way. Like, I didn't want to have to, you know, I just wanted to do it myself. Like, man, I'll make a decision to go there. I won't make a decision to go there. Like, I just wanted to do it that way. And so, the year in San Antonio, again, every year, you know, there are multiple championship caliber teams, but obviously there's only one team that can get there. So after that year in San Antonio, when I knew Tim was retiring, I was like, you know, I got a chance to play with this dude, steal every damn thing in this dude's mind. Same thing with Manu. You know, I didn't hide that. You know, when I was there, I was like, look, man, I'm here to learn from you.
Right.
You know, I'm here to learn and soak up this stuff, because I know how valuable basketball and, like I said, it, for me, it helps framework, gives me a framework for my intelligence, right? So if I can articulate basketball and talk about basketball and be, and critically think about basketball, then that's exercise to be able to do those in other aspects of my life. So, I just went there to learn. And then, you know, when I knew that things were going to be changing there and, you know, Timmy was going to be walking away, I'm like, all right, well, where's the next spot that I can learn the most, you know, enjoy the experience? And, you know, the obvious choice was Golden State.
Yeah, no, that was, I found you were an interesting mix on that team too, because the Warriors, like, and not to say that it is not a tough team, right? But the aesthetic of toughness that we normally have in basketball, this team doesn't really fit it. Like, I always say, like, they look like the high school from the Burbs that comes out with a bunch of dudes who shot threes in their driveways. Like, that's what it appears. Right. And that team normally doesn't win, except they're so good at shooting threes from the driveway. And then you add, like, Draymond to that. But then you came into that team after they went 73-9 and did not win the championship. So, like, what was your impression going in with them?
To start,
yeah,
you know, I knew that, you know, they needed my edge, right? They needed, I mean, that's what I talked about with Steve, like just that consistent edge. Like, I'm probably more relaxed now than I've ever been, or I've been in the last 15 years of my life. Like, the NBA just kept me on edge, sometimes to an unhealthy degree.
Right.
And they knew that, you know, and so while I was there, that was, you know, I went there to provide that daily edge, like in a locker room environment. I'm never not on, you know what I mean? I don't know how to not be on in terms of if we're in this gym, we're working, we're preparing. Yeah, we're not gonna really joke around a whole lot.
Right.
And it's not really gonna be a whole lot of grabby ass and all that other stuff. We're gonna get our work done. We're gonna prepare like, you know, we gotta win and that's it. Because again, I had these realistic conversations with myself about what I wasn't.
Right.
So I couldn't afford to not be serious and not try to maximize every single step in every single moment. So, you know, that's what they needed. You know, that's what I was able to provide. You know, whether I was playing or not, you know what I'm saying? I'm in the weight room and yeah, we might joke for like 5 minutes, but we're not finna joke for 8 minutes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's a seriousness to life that, I think regardless of what you're doing, regardless of how fun it is, you've got to always respect that seriousness. And so they knew that, you know, we talked about that while I was there, the couple years I was there and won the championships. We always were on that line of, you know, when do we have to draw it back in terms of we're a little bit too loose. Music's a little bit too loud. You know, guys are a little bit too loose with the basketball. And so that was really my role, was to just be like, look, yeah, that's enough. We gotta bring it in. You know, I'm some of these guys, like I'm very, I'm not going to confront you in a manner where I'm being combative with you.
Right.
But I am going to confront you.
Right.
You know, I mean, hey man, let's wake up. Let's,
right.
You know, and sometimes it gets me a little bit because like last year, I remember one of those games was really intense and I forgot where we were and, Steve had just taken me out of the game. And so the game was obviously over because Steph was out of the game already. And all I remember is like, I was just so, I just saw some, like when I got back to the bench, somebody like reached to grab Steph, right? Mm-hmm. And I like did this karate chop, grab, squeeze number, right? And I'm like, what the? And then Ralph, the security, like hits me. And then I look up and it's Rick Barry. I'm like, oh, I'm like, oh, but you know, like that's just how I am.
Right.
And, they knew that, you know, and that was what I was there for, to add that, you know, and just to be that guy on the edge and a guy that brought that seriousness that, when they, you know, when the team got a little bit too loose, got a little too careless, you know, I was there to be the guy to sort of help just be that steady. You know, every single day, there's just no deviation from me.
Yeah. Now, you told us after the second championship that I was a room full of stand-up dudes because we didn't find out anything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Have we found out now?
No. Well, somebody's close. Somebody texted me yesterday. They're getting close. But the thing about that statement in particular was like, the NBA, like you said, not only is it hard to play and make it, but it's just hard to be in that environment. And if you're not like a solid individual and you know it, you cover guys, yeah, like these guys, there's some really insecure personalities and insecure people, regardless of what they've achieved, that insecurity is there. And so, you know, you deal with challenges, you deal with personality and you deal with ego and you deal with just, man, I done seen y'all more than my wife. I'm tired of looking at you, man.
Right.
Like, I'm tired of, you know, Steve last year, you know, he basically told us, look, you guys are tired of hearing my voice. And so he basically, I'm not going to say he shut down, but he let us coach one game.
Right.
We were like, you know, running the practices that week because he's like, look, you guys aren't listening to me. I'm talking. Y'all aren't. You're just not listening. What I'm saying is not going in. So I want you guys to take some ownership of it. You know, all of that has to kind of balance out. You know what I'm saying? Like it all has to make sense too.
Right.
You know, so you can't just have, you know, when you talk about like these guys being able to shoot the ball, like there's a science to it to a degree where it's like the threat of the make, right? The threat that he's going to make two or three of these in a row puts you on such edge that you end up making mistakes defensively you don't have to make.
Right.
You end up, you know, everybody's so alert to Steph that this guy's shot fakes. I've never seen it before. He can get three guys off his feet with a shot fake. So he shot fakes the ball. Three guys go flying.
Right.
You know? But it's a part of, like I said, that balance that, all of us professional, the players, the coaches, you got to find in that environment.
See, the thing that was surprising about what happened this year was that we saw it.
Yeah.
Right? Like it got to a place where somebody caught it on a camera phone and then there was like no avoiding it. Otherwise, we'd just be like, it's nothing. We're trying to guess about what it is. But then it gets in front of the world. So like what happens when you have a team where this thing that probably could have been handled behind closed doors. Nobody would have known about it. Draymond's not playing tonight for rest or whatever it is. But then we saw it, so it had to be a suspension. Then it has to be everything else. Like, what does the team have to do after that?
Well, a lot of it is communicating with one another, you know, getting everybody back on the same page, right? Getting everybody back, mission aligned and focused. And that's taking some time. You know, it's a team like I said, a team like the Warriors where people are spinning this narrative that everything is just hunky-dory, you know, happy-go-lucky. It's not the case. You know, it's just, it's not easy. No NBA locker room is easy. No NBA environment is easy. Regardless of how much talent you have or who's, you know, on your team, who the coach is, it's not easy. None of it's easy. And, probably the hardest thing to do is to deal with things once they get to the public. Easy to deal with if nobody knows publicly. But once it gets to the public, it just becomes a matter of the players being able to handle it the right way. You know, we had some stuff when I was in Indy. You know, we had some stuff go on. And, you know, it's just about that openness, you know, and having that communication. Look, man, I messed up. Guys owning up to, you know, their end of the deal. And again, ultimately the players, you know, having the control and the resolve to right the ship.
Now, how easy is that sort of thing for a guy like Kevin Durant?
Yeah. It's tough, right? So KD's a complicated guy because he's got all of these different, he's got this huge target on him. Obviously an immense talent. But you know, one thing you'll learn is like KD is not a hard to get along with kind of dude. Like that's the one thing that was refreshing about, like that dude, like he's like, they call him Slim Reaper, but he is the most casual. Like, yeah, KD, we got a formal event. Okay. I'll be there in shorts and uncut toenails. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, but KD doesn't take himself as serious, I think, as people often project. Like he, you know, other than his basketball, which, you know, obviously he wants to be respected as one of the greats, and he's earned that, right? He's an immensely talented player, but he's not as absorbed with, you know, I think what's going on with him as many people think.
Right.
You know, but for him, you know, it's been a tough, like I said, it's been a tough situation because everybody's gonna, anything that happens with that team, it's gonna all fall on him because obviously how he went there and what people have opinions about how he's handled himself. But, you know, KD is a solid guy. And one thing he's not gonna do is he's not gonna stop playing to try to win. Like the dude wants to win. He knows he's shaping his legacy, his story. So he's not gonna let up, you know, in any way.
Now, I do wonder this because you were the old head on that team.
Mm-hmm.
Is there ever a conversation with him about, man, you just can't worry so much about what these people think about you?
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm one of those people that he can't worry about.
Right, right, clear. Right. So I have had that conversation with him. And he'll tell you, man, I don't, you know, but I think a lot of us, want to know, you know, and, you know, for him, it's fuel. I felt like that. I saw guys, you know, saw him turn on because of something that somebody said. And he's one of those guys, you know, he needs that challenge still. But I don't think, again, I don't think it affects him the way that a lot of times people think it does. I mean, the dude has dealt with a lot, and he's able to perform at a high level under a lot of different levels of scrutiny.
No, last thing I ask you on this, because Draymond is an interesting case, of course, obviously tied to this.
Yeah.
But you are the guy that brought a certain edge, and at least from the distance that most of us have, he looks like Edge all the time. So, right. Like, how's that go with you coming in and him in that same space?
Yeah, Dre and I really, I mean, we get along. We cool. We didn't have any issues. Draymond's the kind of guy, like, you know, you can't back down. Like, he's gonna be combative, you know, at times. He's gonna be aggressive, assertive. That's who he is. He's gonna talk a lot of shit, but you better respond to him. Cause if you don't, he got you. But again, that dude wants to win. He's like, you know, it's hard to describe how he plays in terms of, like, the dude sees damn near every play. You know what I mean? Like, and knows how to make the right play at the right time. Like, okay, I need to work this screen a certain way or pre-switch this way. His talent is very rare. And I think people sometimes dismiss him. But again, he has developed a very unique way of playing, that, you know, he makes them go. And I knew that going in there. But he and I never had any issues. I mean, I had to step in and, you know, keep him from going, you know, crossing that line. I've said this before, like, if when I was there, I didn't allow him to keep going. You know, I'm a very touchy kind of person. So if I got to grab you, I'll grab
touchy.
You.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're going to call it. We're going to call it touchy.
But you know what I mean? Like, if I got to grab you or, you know, get you to look at me to snap out of it, I'll do that. And so, you know, we had a couple of those. I'm like, look, bro, this is not the time, you know, and he understood. And there are times where I'm like, okay, let it off. You know, whatever you got to say, whoever you think, let's let it out. And then we're going to move on.
Yeah. I feel bad for Durant is because my read on Draymond is, you know, the people who just say crazy stuff to each other, even the people they love.
Right.
Like,
right.
You go to their house and they just say the craziest in the world to each other, right. And then they're good with it. But like, right. In my house, we don't do that.
Right.
And
right,
so
right.
Like, when that happens, I'm like, whoa, you gotta say sorry or something. Right. Like, we just can't act like this didn't happen.
Right.
And that seemed to be the mix of those two guys where, like, Draymond, like, they say crazy stuff to each other over there. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, we just gotta get over it. And this other dude is like, no, we don't have to get over it.
And that's the thing. Like, it's like how you deal with it. And that's who Draymond is. Like, he's very emotional. He's on the line. He's at that edge every single play. He can't play any other way. You know, if we had a conversation, when he tries to play like normal, I guess, it doesn't work. You know, when he tries to be the typical forward, that's not him. He's gotta play with aggression, with the edge, with that nastiness, you know, with the, you know, hey, he'll step over the line and come back. Fine. But that's who he is, and he has to be there in order for them to be successful.
Well, man, I'll tell you, this has been, like, one of the best interviews that we have done thus far on The Right
that,
Time,
man.
Now,
sure.
Like, David West, he's the COO of the Historic Basketball League. Now, where can people get more information about the league?
You can go to historicalbasketballleague.com, Historical League Foundation. We're going to continue to educate the people on sort of what the opportunity is that we're presenting as time rolls on. But yeah, they can check us out. I'll be tweeting about it. I'll start to get more and more active, in terms of information and making sure that young people, families, everybody, looking for, a new opportunity, you know, to sort of a new approach, to that stage of basketball, you know, to come look at us.
Hey, man. Well, definitely. I appreciate you joining us here. We appreciate everybody checking us out here on The Right Time. We do this thing here twice a week. Thank you. Subscribe at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. Thanks to my man, Gabe Bassane, for handling everything behind the scenes. And we will talk to you guys. Also, thanks to Indochino, where they are our sponsors. And you know how this goes. We will talk to you guys next week. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.